You may have heard the word about Bounce House, but have you heard the word about Jesus?
Would Jesus be for or against having bounce houses in churches?
He would be for. He loved a bit of revelry.
I don't think he did.
No, as long as it's not devilry, as long as it's regular revelry, he'd be fine with it. Revelry is in, devilry is out.
What if you presented him with deviled eggs?
Doesn't like those.
Does he like devil's fruitcake or angel's fruitcake?
He prefers angel food cake or...
angel hair pasta.
Angel food cake, ambrosia, all that shit he loves.
That's a good diet. You can only eat angelic types of food.
Yeah.
You would die. You would absolutely die. To be fair, Angel Delight is like the Huel of the 70s. Just put some like potassium in it and it's like nutritionally complete.
I'm hearing Echo.
Echo the Dolphin?
Echo the discontinued chocolate biscuit bar. Cars can be sexy. I am not fucking playing Bug ever again.
I'm sorry, can you give it its full title?
Bug! 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 I go to your house at night and I drop some special fluid from a pipette into your ear that makes you like me.
It's still the misogyny podcast.
When do the strippers arrive in this mumble? Why don't you know Gex Law, Specs?
I Specs, I don't Gex.
Gex before you Specs.
Specs before Gex.
We're down woolly and shiny, but we'll just go and...
No girls allowed! No girls allowed! No girls allowed!
Okay, everyone, this can be the misogyny podcast.
Yes!
Hell yeah.
The misogycast.
Hello and welcome to Misogyny Live.
No, I'm just kidding.
You can't put the misogyny back in the bag. It's out the bag.
What's the deal with women?
Are you... Jerry Seinfeld or Richard Schofield? Is that Richard Schofield's theme?
It wasn't the Seinfeld theme. I could tell you that.
That's the opening to Seinfeld.
No, it's not. Bow chicka bow wow.
Hello and welcome to Lunchtime, the only podcast. With me today is Anim Michirino.
Konnichi, what's up, guys?
Raisin Brannerino.
Hello.
Mooglin Pizerino.
Bong, bong, bong.
And, of course, Dr. Math Problem.
Bang, 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 bang. Hi there, I'm Math Problem. What's yours?
Yeah, you.
No joke, I was going to hijack being the host of the podcast, yeah. But then I thought that's too much work, I don't want to do it. And I was going to open the podcast with welcome to the podcast, the only podcast, and then just cut right there. So you did my joke for me without me having to do any effort.
Excellent.
So thanks.
Well done, Katz. Well done.
Do you want to maybe fucking talk about Donkey Kong on the Game Boy?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I like Donkey Kong on the Game Boy. Let's do the premise first, because Mitch likes that. Mitch, do you want to do the premise for Donkey Kong?
I'd rather talk about the sound chip that's in the cartridge.
So Donkey Kong is like It's like a remake of the original arcade Donkey Kong, or a reimagining, I guess.
Reimagining is a better for. It's definitely. I don't know. The original game is 4 stages, and this one is like 100.
Yeah, so it opens with the first 4 stages from the original Donkey Kong, but then has 100 levels of what is essentially like a puzzle platformer where you have to find a key in each level and get it to a door. You can collect other objects to get extra lives. You can dodge enemies. You can kill all the enemies. It's on a time limit. And at the end of every... like 4 levels, you fight Donkey Kong, and then you kind of try and kill him at the end of each world, and then he runs off.
I find it interesting how it subverts your expectations with it opening with the first 4 stages. I'm serious.
It subverts my expectations.
It subverts your expectation because the game is called Donkey Kong, but you play as Mario.
No.
The game is called Donkey Kong 94, but there's 100 levels, so you think it's going to end.
That's true.
You play the first 4 levels from the arcade, and then it expands its scope of what the game actually is. Can you think of any other video games that do that?
I mean, yeah, it is a fun reveal. Like, you know, you beat Donkey Kong at the end of Donkey Kong, and he's like, haha, sucker, that's just the intro stage.
It's like in Nier Automata, where you finish the game, and then it's like, no, do it again. Remember that?
It's like in Kid Icarus Uprising, when you beat Medusa, and then you think the game's over.
Oh, yeah.
And the credits roll, and then... Yeah.
That's a good one.
I think Donkey Kong 94 is like a cute party trick, but if you have to spend any extended time in its presence, it becomes exasperating quite quickly.
I disagree.
Well, good thing it's a portable game, which is pick up and play, so you play in short bursts.
Yeah, fair enough.
I didn't get bored of it, actually. I can see maybe like some of the levels in the middle get a bit frustrating and samey, but like I feel like it's got a good amount of content for its 100 levels.
Yeah, it's got a steady drib and drab of, like, new mechanics in there.
Yeah.
And, like, the mechanics often... So, I mean, they make for good puzzles, like, the first time they're introduced. And then for some number of levels, it's like, oh, I'm doing this again, am I?
Yeah.
Okay.
But sometimes it puts together things that you've done once on their own, and then they combine into a bigger puzzle at times.
They do.
So I guess we should maybe explain what you've got access to in this game. So you start off with Mario. He runs, he jumps, he picks up enemies, kind of like in Mario Brothers 2, and he can pick up the key to transport it to the door. He's also got a weird triple jump, which starts from a handstand. When he's doing a handstand, he can block items that are dropping onto him. So you can block barrels that Donkey Kong throws by doing a handstand and kicking them with your legs. He can do a cool spin on wires to like jump up really high. He can go up and down ladders. We'll come back to that. If he grabs a jack, he can place the jack somewhere in the level and then bounce off it. The same is true of some ladder and bridge making tools and some blocks that you can just sort of set one block in a level sometimes, often to dramatically change enemy pathing so that you can get to a new area, or just to give yourself a leg up.
And a backflip, which is my favorite.
The side flip jump?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, backflip as well. This is the game that originated Mario's backflip, like in Mario 64, where you turn around and jump.
Top 10 bits of Mario trivia no one gives a fuck about.
I found the movement in this game to be really satisfying, to the point where I would be constantly trying to just like side flip and handstand all over the place, and I would constantly die because it just felt good to do those things, even though it wasn't.
I really agree.
Like,
oh, Brent, I absolutely hated the movement in this game.
Oh, the movement's so good.
I can't agree with Cats.
You have a lot of moves that you can do. You have a lot of variety in the question of like how you get from one place to another. But the actual movement in the game is like somebody has taken the movement from the Donkey Kong arcade game and grafted a load of moves onto it, and it feels horrible. Mario is slow. He is slow to do everything. His basic jump sucks. He can't grab things. He feels simultaneously completely overpowered in how high and far he can jump, and yet utterly useless when you actually need to do some platforming because he is so stiff and awkward to control.
I disagree.
Skill issue.
So coming on to he fails to grab things, I think what you're referring to is ladders there. So you can only start climbing a ladder from the bottom of the ladder. You can't jump off a ladder. You can only drop off a ladder. However, the game later introduces vines, which you can jump onto sometimes at any height of the vine, sometimes not. They're a bit picky about it. And you can jump off the vine as well as drop off it.
I did find vines to be like a little sticky and janky.
They're a bit awkward. Sometimes you are forced to grab the vine when you don't want to, and it's like, no, Mario, no, don't do that, because you'll grab it even if you're not, like, pressing up or down or anything.
In some of the levels with moving vines, you fall through them a lot.
I don't think I noticed that happening to me.
The vines are just a reference to...
Any...
You first.
Oh, yeah, I think I know what you're going to say. You always say a reference to DK Jr., aren't you?
Yeah, you know. It's just DK Jr., yeah. Like, they just...
The problem with that is that DK Jr. is a piece of shit, and any time the game introduces DK Jr. mechanics, I roll my eyes.
Little monkey shit.
But again, this was a really nice thing. You get to, like, the first level that introduces vines, and it's just the first level from DK Jr., and it's like, ah, okay, we're doing this again. So you play, like, a couple of DK Jr. levels and then, like, continue with the new game, which is kind of cool.
I never claimed that it wasn't cute. It is cute.
Donkey Kong Jr. shows up and is in a number of levels, like flipping switches and stuff to piss you off.
That, I hated that.
He's hateful.
Donkey Kong or Donkey Kong Jr., which is Donkey Kong, they have their own specific levers that only they can access that they just use to mess with you. And when you're on a time limit, it can mean success or failure.
Yeah.
I hated them.
I think this game should have decided whether it was a platformer or a puzzle game.
I do agree.
I think it works well.
I don't like it when I solve the puzzle and then I run out of time or I fall off and die and have to solve the puzzle again. Solving the puzzle is only fun the first time. At the very least, they could have tried to split it more evenly into platforming stage, puzzle stage, and have it so that in the puzzle stages there's no clock and you can't die.
Well, I do that. The boss levels are mostly all...
There's like a soft delineation.
The boss levels are mostly all boring. I don't like them.
I don't mind them.
A lot of the, like, end of world bosses are just fight Donkey Kong again and there's nothing spicy to it.
And they're so much easier than everything else.
Yeah, you can beat them in like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I like some of the Donkey Kong fights, but again, towards the end of the game, they recycle that fight where he throws barrels down. And you have to carry barrels up like a tall thing to throw them at him.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
I disliked the boss levels until I realized the gimmick, which is that if you're doing a handstand and a barrel lands on your feet,
it just
knocks it to the side and you can pick it up there.
That is a very cool mechanic.
One thing I do like about this game is that not only does it teach you moves you already had access to, and it also teaches you new mechanics through cute little cutscenes that bookend every stage.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very cute.
It's got a lot of charm in that, like, you learn everything contextually either through the puzzle or through the little cutscenes between worlds, which is great. But there's also stuff like, one of my favorite things about this game is the little monkeys that move along platforms and you can grab their tails to swing on them like vines. But if you grab their tail and a vine that's stationary at the same time, they'll like struggle against you to try and keep walking and they can't. Mario's got a lot of extra animations that just make him look like kind of charming. Like,
yeah,
he'll do a little, when he lands a triple jump, he'll just like, he'll do a pose.
Does a ta-da!
Yeah,
that's my favorite.
If he drops from too high, but it doesn't kill him, because there is still fall damage in this, he'll do like a little roll if you drop from a certain height, or he'll like fall flat on his face and then get up if you fall from a different height, which is kind of cool.
A lot of unique death animations too.
Yeah. If you try and move away from a vine that there's no vine for him to grab, he'll like reach out with his hand like,
yeah.
Like, there's a lot of very Nintendo touches in this game, which is impressive given that Nintendo didn't make it.
Yeah, I know, right?
For a Game Boy game, I think it's like very impressive. Like, the sprite work is really good. The mechanics are very like... compare this to like Mario Land. This is like such a huge like step up from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the context of 1994, it's pretty fucking amazing.
Mm. Yeah. I have a bit of a bias against the original Game Boy games because my only point of reference is Pokemon Red and Blue, so...
I get that, yeah.
So I usually dismiss them as being like really cheap knockoffs of the home console version, but this was actually better than the NES Donkey Kong game because it was more than four levels.
I mean, yeah. One thing that works against me for this game is that there's actually lots and lots of great puzzle games and great puzzle platformers on the Game Boy.
I strongly disagree with that statement. Not the lots bit, because that is absolutely correct, but I strongly disagree with the great bit there.
Warioland 3, Quirk, Amazing Tater, Cat Trap, Trip World, Tetris, Flipple,
Solomon's Key,
Daedal and Opus.
I don't think all of those are action platformers, and well do you know it.
Action platformers. No, you shouldn't make an action platformer on the Game Boy.
Sorry, no, puzzle platformers. Like, those are not all puzzle platformers.
Don't make a fucking platformer game where I can die of fall damage. And don't make a puzzle game where I can run out of time when I've worked out how to solve the puzzle.
Well, Mario in 3D games can die of fall damage.
I don't mind the fall damage because I think it's a neat little callback to the original as well. Everything kind of works a little bit like the original Donkey Kong in this, and I don't mind it too much because it's quite lenient with the fall damage.
Yeah, you can fall pretty far.
They shouldn't have made it like that. He can fall like 20 feet.
I feel like the main resource that you're spending is just your time, though, because extra lives are so liberally applied throughout the game.
They are lavished upon you.
Well, you say that, but the final boss fucking kicked my ass up and down with my extra lives.
The final boss is a little bit tricky. The last world is great because the last world, you go to like Donkey Kong's castle and every level has you fighting Donkey Kong. And then you think the game is over, rolls credits, and then Donkey Kong comes back as a Head and Hands boss.
Oh, yeah.
And it's great.
Head and Hands boss spotted.
Yeah, but that's a hard boss. That's like the only hard boss in the game. He just slaps your shit around with his giant monkey head.
I didn't think he was that bad.
And hands.
He's not that bad. It's just...
Took me about 20 lives.
There's a difficulty curve aspect to it, which is just...
Took me a lot of lives.
The difficulty curve goes very, very steep very quickly when that happens.
Yeah, but it's a fun little last boss. Like, you think it's definitely over, and then it's like, oh, here's one more thing.
I would have thought it was the end if I hadn't watched you stream the finale.
Yeah.
I want to talk about keys a little bit.
Sure.
I think the way keys are handled is really fun. So the way keys work is that, like, once you pick it up from its initial location, if you drop it somewhere, it despawns after a little bit. There's a lot of puzzles that involve you having to, like, throw it somewhere and then, like, regroup with it. And there's a lot of, like, franticness about, like, optimizing, like, how you're going to get back to the key.
The time limit is very tight for the key.
It's really tight. There's so many times where I, like, barely didn't make it or barely made it, and it's really satisfying. I like it a lot.
I don't like it. I don't like it. I think the key should stay when you drop it.
No. Oh, I like it. I think it's so it doesn't get in a fucked up position.
Yes.
It's also important for some of the puzzles, because, like, there's also an aspect of when you build a structure with something like the jacks or with the ladders, you can extend how long that is placed by picking up another one and placing another one.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the puzzles rely on you having to pick up every structure in a level to place them down, so you've got long enough to get them down while also juggling the key, which is very frantic and a little bit frustrating at times, but it feels very rewarding when you've got, like, the route down.
Yeah, I agree.
What I didn't like about the keys was the hidden doors.
Yeah, I was gonna mention those.
They only
do
that, like, once or twice, though.
Sure, but I don't like it because I have ADD, so I look away from the screen during the intros, and then I'm like, wait, where's the fucking door again?
Yeah.
It's there just to punish the fact that you weren't looking at the screen when the fact, help, was going on.
It got me, like, once or twice there as well, but you get used to it after a little while.
Yeah, it only happens once or twice, so.
So, Catsman didn't like it. Everyone else did.
I did like it. I just think it's very flawed.
I would like to ask one more question. I would like us all to confess which of the really stupid and trivially easy puzzles got us stuck for like 20 minutes on.
Oh, I had a lot of trouble with one that is just like a vertical platformer where you have to place down all of the platforms yourself. I think I came up with a really stupid solution to that was completely off the mark. But it was fun.
My confession, my guilty, I could not solve this puzzle, like, without really thinking for 20 minutes about it. It's a boat level, it's quite early on in the game. You have to put, like, a horizontal, like, bridge platform down so that an enemy will walk across it and then walk on some spikes. And I could not work it, I did not work it out for, like, 25 minutes.
I saw Specs do the same thing.
Yes.
You gave me like a very subtle hint and I was like, oh, I see what you mean. Right. Okay.
Exactly. I watched it and went, justified.
Because you've never stood on one of those guys before that point, I don't think. So you don't realize that like they can walk on spikes, I think.
I'd stood on one and I realized I could walk on it, but I could not for the life of me work out what the fuck I was meant to do. It took me 25 minutes and I don't feel guilty because it would also have taken you that long as well.
There's one level, I don't know if I actually did it the right way or not. I think I kind of cheesed it. It was somewhere in the second to last world where it's like a vertical level and there are some blocks that can only be broken with the hammer. But the hammers are like at the bottom of the level. And so I remember I just like tossed the hammers up the level, but the timing was so tight because the hammer despawned.
I think that's intentional. I think I remember the level you mean.
It was really, it felt like really way tighter than any other window I've dealt with. So I felt like I was doing it wrong.
There's a certain amount of levels where I think there's flexibility to solve it in like two or three different ways, which is really good because it makes you feel like you're breaking the game because it's not the obvious intended way.
There's levels with like little bits of cheese, not enough to negate the challenge, but you can do some stuff.
Especially with like some
particularly
of the bigger
with the
jumps.
Jumping moves, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, early on, like the first like arcade port levels, like if you realize that you can do backflips and like...
yeah, you can just plow through them.
Yeah, it's great.
Any like DK level, I feel like you can just totally break with the big jumps.
I didn't actually struggle with any of the puzzles, at least that I played, because I only played up to like the plane, I think. But the level with the little monkeys that are holding vines, that took me like 20 minutes because I fell through the fucking vines every time. At least in my frame of reference, I fell through the vines. I was like, game, what do you mean that doesn't count as me fucking... So I fall in the water and I have to swim all the way back and I get back up and I try and grab the vine again. Then I'm like, oh no, I'm out of time. Anything I do now is worthless because I will just run out of time.
Did anyone else play this on the Super Game Boy with the actual Super Game Boy enhancements?
No, I just played for the GBC color.
No, I couldn't figure out an emulator how to get it to work.
Yeah, it's quite difficult. I did slap it into my SNES and play for a while. Like, there are a couple of actual enhancements to it. Like, it does proper color in the game, and you actually get a voice sample, which is really weird to think about whenever Pauline yells for help. It's kind of neat.
Well, as some of us will know, there's a Space Invaders game on the Game Boy.
Yes.
Where if you plug into the Super NES, it becomes a Super NES game.
Thanks, Jeremy Parrish.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Interesting.
Like a completely different game, or?
Yeah, yeah.
They like hold a whole Super Nintendo ROM in there, and then when you put it in the Super Game Boy, it just like bootstraps the process of starting the SNES game, and you play a whole ass fucking SNES game.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's very good. It's a good port of Space Invaders as well.
I have played a bit of the sequel to this game now as well.
Yes.
So they made a Game Boy Advance game, which Mario has like all of the same moves. He has that weird GBA compressed Charles Martinet voice.
Yes.
Just what I needed.
Just what I needed.
And it's just devoid of any charm. Just like it's got weird pre-rendered animation similar to like Donkey Kong Country, but it just feels odd. The way Mario moves is like too realistic for Mario in a way. It's really odd. And I think it loses some of the charm, which means although it's basically the same game, it just doesn't feel as fun. Although it may be playing it straight off the back of completing the harder levels of the Game Boy 94 one. It might just be that I find the levels boring because they're not as challenging. I don't know.
It is an interesting problem because they tried to make like a mini series out of this, like with Mario versus DK.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of works. But I don't think it's ever as elegant as, like, the first one. I think that's just a lot better of a game.
It's weird where this series went, right? Like, it started with the first two games are very similar to each other. And then it just kind of veered into...
It becomes like Lemmings.
Lemmings, yeah.
Or Krusty the Clown's Funhouse.
Or Troddlers, if you prefer.
Yeah, the later games in the series are like March of the Minis, where Mario doesn't really do much and you've just got to place like blocks down to get your little mini Marios to march to the right places. So it's very like Lemmings.
There's also a Mario versus Wario game for the Super Nintendo that uses the mouse. that's very similar.
Weird.
In terms of, like, Mario gets a bucket on his head, can't see where he's going, and you've got to put stuff in his way to make sure he gets to his destination.
Yeah.
Like, very strange. But the legacy of this game is really weird, because he's got all of his Mario 64 moves way before Mario 64 was ever a thing.
Yeah.
Like, very strange. Very strange how this, of all things, would be, like, a touchstone for the Mario 64 devs. Or maybe it wasn't, and it just... Like, the confluence of ideas and the way that you move in 3D was just, that's how they made it.
I think this is one of those things that Miyamoto would never admit if you asked him about it. He'd like, oh no, I never even heard they were making that game. I'm the king of Mario.
Well, he's credited.
Yeah.
He's the producer of this game.
He's like, they ghost wrote this game for me?
I told them to do the backflip
because I knew I was going to be making Mario 64.
New Kong lore, if you go to the manual, go to page 20, it tells you Kong's friends.
Yeah.
Kong is friends with Dottie, Rappy, Bao Bao. He's also friends with fire and oil.
Really?
So let's decide our next game.
Put it on the wheel.
Are we having a wheel?
I've made a wheel. If you all want to come into voice other... And I'll stream the wheel.
All right. wheel.
I'm sorry that the people here won't be able to listen to the wheel.
So the way I've designed the wheel is diplomatically.
We've started a vote. We will link the vote so that viewers can vote for games. You can add games that you want us to play, and we will
don't
vote.
Don't add any more games. We will vote,
and then we will weight the wheel based on how many votes each thing gets, like a Nintendo Online game.
Yeah. So what's happened is Odama's got 4 slots on the wheel because there's been 4 votes.
I want to play Odama.
Tell me when to go and when to start.
Go.
Is he going to
stop that wheel, Murgle? You seem to be fucking spinning
it. Sorry, like, there's multiple fucking ways to do it. Stop the wheel.
And it is... Deadly creatures
on everything.
Deadly Creatures on the Wii, starring Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper?
Nice.
All I know about Deadly Creatures is the world's most Wii core game.
Game have a lot of motion controls in it.
It's a spiritual companion to Disaster Day of Crisis, because it's Wii core.
Yeah, Wii core game.
I wouldn't say
Wii core
that.
Game. Yeah. Right, moving on. Book club over. Time for Poetry for Gamers.
We're playing Video Games for Neanderthals. It is a house-ruled Poetry for Neanderthals, whereby we'll have 2 teams. I'll give one person a card, which will have a video game franchise, and then a spin-off. And the person has to describe what that is in 1-syllable words to their partner, who then has to guess. And if you say multiple-syllable words, you're out. If you say anything that's on the card, you're out. And you're not allowed to say things like rhymes with XXX.
We can't say rhymes with, okay.
No, that's in the rulebook.
What about sounds like?
No, that's the same. We'll do Specs and Catsmen and Moogs and Bran. How about that? So we'll start with Bran first, okay? You'll have a minute 30. All right, so here's the card.
Okay, I'm ready.
Hit me with it.
Block go down.
Tetris?
Yes. Block go down fights.
Tetris versus?
No.
Tetris 99?
No. When I fight, I use my...
Hands?
No.
When you fight, you use your... You can't just skip to the next
like
one.
Like, move. Do you want to skip? No, skip. Olds. This isn't a series.
Do it.
Never mind. Olds. Games.
Space Invaders. Pong.
Close. On.
Galaga.
This... Not a game.
Not a game! Tennis for 2!
No. Skip.
The fuck was that?
time.
You didn't even give
him
the
god.
Next
fuck.
Did we not do Tetris Attack last time? Because I remember us struggling with that.
It was Tetris Attack.
Oh, Tetris
yeah.
Attack.
Yeah, I'm reshuffling the cards. I reshuffled the cards, bruh. That's how they came up.
Oh, we can have the same games. I didn't know.
All right, whenever you're ready, Cats.
Red Man Go Race.
Mario Kart.
Yes.
Red Man Go Race. Wheel.
Mario Kart Wii.
Yes.
Like to bike on NES.
No. Bonk, you said bike. That's in the...
Okay, that's fine.
Oh, because it's
technically,
like bike.
It's a compound
bike,
word.
Yeah. I'll compound you.
Small guys fight from ball.
Fight from ball?
Come out of ball. Fight.
Pikmin? Smash Bros?
Come out of ball.
Pinball?
Game you like.
Bags, come on.
Game I like. Oh, Pokemon.
Yes.
Take.
Oh,
shot.
Pokemon Snap.
Yes. That was nice.
Mute Man.
Time.
Mute Man Kill.
Time.
The Quiet Man.
No, the Quiet Man is deaf. He's not mute.
All right, Moogle, you're next.
You play game with friends in same room. White stick.
Wii Sports.
Hand. Thank fuck. Next game like that.
Wii Sports Resort.
Thank fuck. Bald guy kill men. Lots men.
Hitman.
Okay.
I don't know anything else about Hitman, you should just skip.
okay, skip. Men shoot gun, lots.
Call of Duty, Halo.
Old.
Medal of Honor, GoldenEye.
On NES.
Oh, Metal Gear, Contra.
Thank God, Jesus fuck. You know what, Skip? Fuck off. What the fuck, Mitch? You play game on this.
Console.
From Green Corp.
What the fuck is Green Corp?
Green Corp.
Oh, Xbox.
Thank fuck. Turn. Walk.
Time.
360.
Time.
It was just the Xbox 360.
Jesus fucking Christ, Mitchell. You piece of shit.
See, so I thought they were all going to be games, which is why one of the ones I got before it was just Atari, and I was very confused.
Oh, I see.
Didn't know that.
So we got to be prepared for that fucking nonsense now, have we?
Mitchell, you've pulled a sneaky one.
Specs, you're next.
I'm Specs, I'm next. I'm ready.
Yeah, go on then.
Man on bike throw sheet at door. On NES.
Paperboy.
Yes.
Wow.
Game with good look. No, skip. You live on ring, shoot guys.
Halo.
Yes.
Halo Reach.
That. Yeah, but that's the one we were stuck on for ages. You like this game. Lots.
Mibibli's Quest.
Jump, shoot, man.
Mega Man.
No, I said man. Skip it.
Yeah, man.
These guy make red man, green man, ball throw game catch men. They make lots game. Leave it to the gods.
Mibibli's Quest.
No. These men make games on NES, on SNES, on Wii.
Red Man Shoot Ball, I don't know.
These guys make games. They make
Nintendo.
The games. Yes, skip, because I've already used the next word.
Time.
Leave luck to gods was an excellent fucking clue.
That's good.
You can also have companies.
I don't think we should reuse previous cards because, like, Catsman had two of those previously.
That's because it's a site of previous trauma, Specs. at your hands.
What was a game that looked good?
That was supposed to be Paperboy 64. Oh, I couldn't think really? Of a way of like saying 3D.
Like, I like the notion of people saying Paperboy 64 looks good.
We're doing two rounds each, so Brian, you're for your second round.
Push ball, get big, small man.
Katamari Damashi.
Yes. Come soon.
We love Katamari.
Yes. Yep.
Oof. Oof.
That's a minus one, by the way.
Wait, really? I didn't know that. Yep. All right, fine. Shoot game.
Call of Duty.
No.
Quake. Doom.
No. Made by team in...
Metroid Prime.
Place we in... No.
Shoot game.
Shoot game. Like Call of.
Medal of Honor.
No.
Jesus Christ. Battlefield.
Yes.
Battlefield 1.
Country. That's a two-word skip. Bonk, all right. Bonk. That's two syllables.
I'm not a knock. I'm not bonking them.
Bonk.
I'm not a fucking knock, Specs.
Not close.
Far.
When I said I...
What?
This is good.
When I said I...
When you... Far Cry. Yes, good. Very yes. good.
Nice, nice.
Next, go.
Time.
Very good, very good. Like that.
Okay, cats, whenever you're ready.
Man who steal, we play.
Thief.
Yes.
Deadly Shadows.
Next.
Nope. When you said next, I thought...
I actually meant the next game no. in the yeah, series. No.
Sorry.
Thief 2, The Metal Age.
Not Light.
Dark. The Dark Project?
Yes. Date, Girls.
Leisure Suit Larry.
In Old Time, with Fight.
Shenmue? Persona? Date, Girls.
West.
Red Dead?
Worse.
Grand Theft Auto?
Worse.
I don't know. I think we're going to have to skip this.
Skip.
Oh, what was that?
It wasn't Custer's Revenge, was it?
Pink Ball.
Kirby.
Pink Ball, go fast.
Kirby Air Ride.
Yes. Dan John Jules.
Gex.
Yes.
Gex, Enter the Gecko.
Time.
Very good, like that.
Did you know that he has sex with a human woman?
Yes, I did know that. Moogle, you're...
Like dog, fly through space. Shoot many... No, I said a bad
many
thing.
Don't knock
on yourself, dude.
Yeah, I know. Big bot from sky go down. I like. Shoot game.
Big bot from sky?
Big bot from sky go down. Shoot game. I play lots. All time.
Oh, Timefall.
Next. Game. Lot. Play. At same time. One go at time, one left at end.
What?
This is same game as last.
Oh.
But next.
You
will know. Big game, lot cash.
Yeah, I forget what it's called. Fuck.
Skip?
Time.
Yep, skip.
Time.
No, that's it. That's time.
That was Apex, presumably.
Apex.
It was, yeah. I gave you too much. I had too much faith. I fucked up with the first one as well, because like I should have been able to give you like the second one there.
What was the dog game?
Dog game?
Dog fly through space.
Star Fox. Like dog, fly through space.
Oh, not dog. Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't get that.
I said shoot many, but it was shoot lot thing.
Oh, shit. I was thinking about, like, when you said like dog, I was thinking about, like, wolves.
Should have just said good luck, and you would probably
have
got it.
Yeah, you should have just said, like, good luck.
Good luck.
All right, Specs, you're the last to go.
Yeah. It's a Wii. It's a Wii.
Wario Land the Shake Dimension.
No.
New Super Mario Bros. Wii.
No. It's a Wii!
Yes, man.
Fat man, game.
Mario.
Make lots of game.
Mario Maker.
No, big fat man.
Wario.
Yes. What game on Wii?
Wario Land Shake It.
No.
God.
The not land game he is in as well.
Wario Land Shake It is the
no,
only Wii
land,
Wario game.
Not land.
Wario the fucking smooth moves.
Yes. He have big cock.
Rayman.
Yes. Bad game he in on Wii.
Rayman Raving Rabbids.
Yes. On game you hold in hand, role play game from men.
Golden Sun.
Yes.
Wow.
Not light.
I don't know the name of any Golden Sun games.
Sunset. Sunset, but not.
Golden Sun, Twilight,
Time.
Golden Sun.
Time.
Dusk something, right?
It's Dark Dawn, so I needed to do like the opposite of Light Sunset is what I was going for.
Yeah, I think you guys have got this one. Like,
no, you don't have to be so down on yourself, Moogle.
I'm glad that you got Rayman from He Have
yes,
Big Cock.
He Has Big Dick. Yes,
that's spiritually important to me.
So, final scores. Bran and Moogle's team, 11. Specs and Cats, 21.
Yeah,
nice.
You see?
Ooh. Rocking it.
Couldn't have expected that. I want everyone to go away and wonder what the fuck the bad American fantasy dating game is.
I said Let Me See Larry. That's the only one I can think of.
That's not fantasy. If you're listening to this, comment what you think it is.
Okay, next up on the agenda, guess who's in prison?
No!
It's Animich's boy, Yuji Naka.
No! He did nothing wrong.
Honestly, prison's too good for him.
Yuji Naka got Yuji Naka'd.
He got out! Didn't you hear he escaped?
Don't they have the fucking death penalty in Japan?
Yeah, they
what's,
do, I think.
What's stopping them?
He broke free, though. Did you not hear?
I didn't hear.
They were transporting him via helicopter, and then he said, this flight is lame, no in-flight movies, I'm out of here. And then he busted out.
Yeah.
And then he surfboarded down San Francisco, and he got away.
Yahoo! It turns out, if there's a trail of rings that he can follow, it's fucking easy for him.
He just zips out of it. As reported by NHK, Naka stated there was no doubt in response to accusations of having violated the Financial Instruments and Exchange Act. I love the idea that the judge asked him, did you violate this act? And he just like flipped the Sonic Adventure pose and went, no doubt.
I think insider trading is a victimless crime and therefore he should not be put to jail.
So I don't feel that way about insider trading, but I do feel like, you know, like with Theranos and stuff, like if you are an investor on the stock market, it should be your responsibility to know if someone is scamming you. And if you lose money to them, that's just because you're a bad stock market investor.
Do you think this all came about because Naka was mind broken by Balan Wonderland and like became evil Naka?
He became the Joker.
If Square Enix weren't so, didn't, you know, withhold his budget for so long, maybe he wouldn't have felt the need to try and get one over on Square Enix.
Are you suggesting that he was going to use this money to fund the development of a
yes.
Balan Wonderland's Wonderworld sequel
yes.
that we'll now presumably never get?
Yes, and it makes me sad.
Has the decline of one man ever been more pronounced?
Probably. Even in the video game industry, probably. Cliffy B, maybe? We want to talk about Cliffy B?
Yeah, but Cliffy B made a handful of games that people liked and a handful of games that nobody gave a shit about. Yuji Naka is in prison.
Oh, you mean... Oh.
He went from fucking developing Sonic the Hedgehog 2 to developing Sonic Adventure 2 to developing Sonic 2006 to being in prison.
Well, there was like the do you remember the Gizmodo, the .com, game.com? Remember that? Great Gamecom.
Oh, I remember game.com, yeah.
No, I don't remember this.
I do.
The CEO of the company or something, he went on a drug binge in a Ferrari and crashed it at like 120 miles an hour and he had ties to the Swedish mafia, right?
Yeah, we talked about this on the podcast.
First of all, there's a Swedish mafia?
I imagine they're all really polite.
Don't worry, if you can't get the money, you can get it next week. That's what they do.
That's what they sound. That's what Swedish people, as we all know, that's what they Swedish sound people like sound like.
Then they send the gnomes to break your legs.
Gnomes are fucking Finnish, you idiot.
Oh yeah, you're right. Shit, what do the Swedes have?
Gnomes.
Just, we've gone full into fucking Swedophobia now.
Well, if Wooly was here to stop us.
This is your fault.
Yeah, Wooly, if you're listening to this,
do better.
You've turned into a big time villain.
$30 million worth of Funko Pops have been chucked into a landfill because it was cheaper to dump them than distribute them to the market where they weren't going to sell.
That's true.
That's $30 million of plastic crap that is not aesthetically pleasing dumped in the landfill. How many Native Americans played by Italian actors do you think are crying right now?
It's an excellent question for the ages.
Sorry. How many Native Americans played by post-Roman actors do you think are crying right now?
It's called people affected with Italianism.
But like, Funko Pops sell well, right? Why did they have to do this?
Yeah, exactly. Why? Why do they sell well?
First of all, yes, why?
I see them on the shelves of nerd tat shops all the time.
Yep.
I don't know if they sell. I don't know if anyone owns them. Presumably lots of people own them until they started needing to spend that money on heating their house.
Well, you can use Funkos as insulation.
Insulation from having sex.
It's true.
I think everyone owns at least one Funko Pop because they've been given it in a secret Santa, right?
Oh, I was gonna say the sole market for Funko Pops is people's grandmas who are like, you like what's the name of a game that children like?
Rick and Morty.
You like Rick and Morty, right?
I'm shocked that I've never been given a Funko Pop. I feel like it should have happened by now.
There's still time, Bran.
So, I'm doing a weekly trip to Birmingham at the moment because that's a thing that seems to happen to me. And at the train station, there is a dedicated Funko Pop shop.
What?
Birmingham New Street is the worst fucking train station on the earth, and this has just made me hate it more.
There is also in the town centre where I live, there is a shop which is, it's not dedicated to Funko Pops per se, but it's probably like 75% of their shelf space is Funko Pops. Like it's just general like pop culture figures and stuff in that shop, but most of it is Funko Pops.
Yeah, I've seen stores like that.
Just thinking, like, the other reason they've dumped all these Funkos is, one, it's costing them in storage space, I guess. The other, they can probably write this off for tax, right? They can just say, oh, we lost $30 million worth of stuff that wasn't going to sell due to tax. Can we have that money rebated?
That is what HBO did, but instead of dumping Funko Pops in a landfill, they destroyed their original animation division.
God.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, also it's scarcity. Like, if they could make money by discounting the Funko Pops they have already, because let's be honest, they're not fucking worth £10.
You devalue the brand.
Yeah, you devalue the brand. Then people will suddenly learn that all of the Funko Pops that they've bought for £10 a pop are actually worthless plastic waste, and they'll presumably go insane.
They could have just, like, held on to them and, like, reintroduced them later as, like, oh, this rare Funko Pop is back in stock, yeah.
Out of the vault.
I think part of the issue was that they didn't have anywhere to store these Funko Pops, so they couldn't have done that because it was costing them to keep them locked up in a warehouse somewhere. Like, they needed the shelf space back at Funko HQ for the new set of Marvel Across the Spider-Verse Funko Pops. Get these out of here. We need room for Spider-Man.
Give me figures of Spider-Man.
Can't you just melt them all down and make new Funko Pops from the old ones?
It's not how plastic works.
But you can make Funko Pop jungle juice.
Mmm, delicious.
Well, I wonder if, like, poor kids who live at the Funko Pop landfill are just gonna get all the Funko Pops out of the landfill and sell them themselves.
You know, when you watch, like, Comic Relief and they show impoverished nations and they're always wearing football jerseys because they donate the football jerseys from the losing team because they think they're gonna win.
That's true.
So they hand them over. So why don't we just give all the kids Funko Pops? for comic relief.
I think that in order to protect their brand, they should, when they seal away the Funko Pops in the landfill, they should put like some botulism in there or something so that nobody goes and steals.
Nobody can steal the Funkos.
The pops, or they get infected.
You think in like 30 years, somebody's going to like do a like a excavation of this,
like they did with
this
E.T.
landfill, like with the exactly.
People will look at these pops and be like, so this was the folly of the 2020s.
This was the downfall of mankind.
This is where it all went wrong. The problem is that we threw away the pops.
No, we 1,000 years in the future, archaeological sites say there was once a civilization here of tiny 5 to 7 centimeter people. There was a civilization. Mass graves were dug for these 5 to 7 centimeter tiny people.
They were made of plastic. They had enormous heads.
They must have been very intelligent.
Look on my pops, ye mighty, and despair.
Jesus.
Nothing beside remains round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare.
I'm having a tremendous amount of fun right now searching for Funko Pops on eBay and scrolling through and looking at all of the Funko Pop auctions with zero bids on them.
Lovely.
Are there any that are like hermetically sealed?
Yeah, people keep their Funko Pop sealed. Somebody is trying to sell here a Steven Spielberg signed E.T. the Extraterrestrial Funko Pop, which is incredibly funny, because can you imagine someone at like a convention or something going up to Steven Spielberg and he's like, sign my Funko Pop, and Steven Spielberg is like, what the fuck is a Funko Pop? It's being sold for £806 and there are no bidders.
There are at least two different Diana Princess of Wales Funko Pops. One in a red dress and one in the revenge dress. Fuck Funko. Fuck Funko Pops. Fuck this fucking... Fuck this shit.
As it turns out, nerds are gullible.
It's people like, oh, I bet I can... If I get a collection of these, I can sell them all for big money. It's like, they fucking can't. Fuck off.
Yeah, you can, though. Look at this. Let me tell you about this. 12,000 pound Funko Pop that is on sale. It is a Frontline Heroes Funko Pop signed by Anthony Fauci, the former chief medical advisor to the President of the United States. You can't tell me there's no value in that.
Gash in the Attic. Does anyone know how the Cash in the Attic theme goes? And we'll...
No.
Gash in the Attic, we went to my attic. What did we find? Playboy and Hustler. Gash in the Attic, we looked at titties, cocks and balls, titties and fannies.
It's not as fun as it sounds from that theme song.
I had fun.
It was very fucking funny, though.
It was very funny.
Trying to climb through the hole that is the loft, the attic.
It was difficult. It was like being Indiana Jones.
And then standing around in the dark using our phones to illuminate the porn.
It really takes me back to the early days of porn when people found it scrawled on cave walls.
So, for context, I
have a large porn collection. You can't help yourself.
I bought my house some years ago and I didn't go up to the attic for maybe a year after owning my house. So I was like, I wonder what's in the attic, because it's really hard to get to. Like, you really need to climb up. We used a stepladder and then still had to like climb up through a little hole after that. And I found there was a lot of porn in my attic. There's some like 20 magazines in there. So we've got like old issues of Hustler, Playboy, Luxury Sex,
Flesh World.
Luxury Sex is a really funny name for a magazine, but there's no sex in the magazine itself.
Shame.
The reason we went up to the attic to look at the porn was Mitch wanted to. But the reason the porn is there is presumably whoever owned my house before me bought a load of porn and forgot it was in the attic before selling the house to me.
No. What I imagine is like an old guy like hauling himself up to the attic so that he can honk off with a collection of pornography by the light of like a torch that takes
candle,
D battery. A candle. Yeah, a candle's more erotic.
What's funny about these is they provide an interesting little time capsule where we can go back to like the early 2000s and the late 90s and see what people were writing about for porn magazines. But there's a lot of articles like Playboy. People joke about I read Playboy for the articles. It's all articles.
Yeah, there's very little porn in it.
Yeah, there's not much porn in Playboy at all. It's only really worth getting for the articles. But what this means is there is insight into what people were thinking about video games in this porn. And there's some video games in there that didn't ever come out that people have like previewed and written up an article for like Playboy or Penthouse or whatever. And it's just like, have you ever heard of this game? No, we haven't, because it never came out. It's really weird.
Wasn't there a sort of bizarre MMO that failed that got like a 2-page spread?
Yeah, it was like a Ubisoft MMO.
Was that the one with the AR game that came along with it?
Yeah, yeah. It was like a subscription AR game for $10 a month.
Yeah, I had fun reading all the porn. What's funny is you read Playboys from the early aughts and it's all articles which are like, yeah, so I get my boobs out for the magazine and it makes me feel empowered. And then you read Hustler and it's like a joke about black people.
There's a lot of racist jokes in these that would even make me pull my collar.
Like, it looks like something from the 70s. It's yes. So dirty.
A boomer hentai.
And yeah, there was legitimate boomer hentai in there. I didn't realize quite the kind of like cultural distinction between highbrow porn and lowbrow porn.
And yet...
Yeah, there's lots of, like, comics in this, like, satirical comics about politics at the time. In this Hustler, I've got here presidential abduction. There are, like, three greys with a very long probe. George W. Bush, I assume that is laying down on a bed, and they are pulling a brain out of his ass. The caption reads, "Never got a brain with the anal probe before."
Man, it's really funny to me that there is so much Bush in Playboy. I'm glad people don't buy pornography anymore.
There's... Oh, God, this one's bad. There's a man and a woman having what appears to be 69 very nice, and the dog just is sat next to them with an erection, and the woman has turned to the dog to say, "Later."
Jesus fucking Christ.
That is presumably Hustler.
Yeah, these are all Hustler, yeah. I think the worst one we had was... I'm not even going to say it. It was just racist. There's a lot of racist shit in Hustler.
I'll say it!
He'll say it.
Thanks for taking the hit, Mitch.
It's a shop window in a toy store. It's a parody of the Cabbage Patch Kids, but all the heads are black, and they have stereotypical black names, and they're called the Watermelon Patch Kids.
Oof.
I'm going back in time to tell Hustler that they need to get better jokes.
We found something interesting, though, because in the two issues of Playboy I now own, there are adverts for Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Yes!
So this dates this back to about 2001. One of the adverts is Conker's got his head sandwiched between a woman's large breasts, and the caption is, "Conker is a squirrel, squirrels like nuts, can you help Conker find some nuts?" There's one of them has like a dragon masturbating. I can't remember what all of them are, but there was a string of like adverts in Playboy that had funny cartoons with Conker in. And Playboy had a website dedicated to Conker's Bad Fur Day. Unfortunately, it doesn't still exist in the Wayback Machine. We couldn't get through to it, but there was like a little game you could play on the Playboy website where you could like help Conker have a look through the Playboy Mansion. And they also hosted a Conker's Bad Fur Day tournament for the multiplayer sort of modes in Conker before the game had come out. And the first, maybe not the first ever print media to talk about Neil Druckmann of Naughty Dog, but certainly some of the very early of it, is Neil Druckmann was at that Playboy-hosted Conker's Bad Fur Day event. Let me read to you.
Christ.
"After Miss March explained the rules, they then faced off in a tense final battle with FSU, so that's Florida State University, student Neil Druckmann's dodging skills as a Frenchie carrying the day." So I think Neil Druckmann got his foot in with the video games industry by winning a Conker's Bad Fur Day tournament at the Playboy Mansion.
I mean, that's an interesting theory, but he is a programmer and he probably learned to program and then just got a job as a programmer.
No.
This is where he made the connections. He made the connections at the Playboy Mansion.
He was like, man, this is pretty sweet gig, be a video game guy. I get to go to the Playboy Mansion, and that's where it started.
He never got to go to the Playboy Mansion again.
He's still trying to this day.
Now he's like, no boobs allowed. Remember how Naughty Dog used to be? They were all about boobs, and now they're not about boobs at all.
Naughty Dog is nothing but a reflection of the culture that exists around it.
Gamers.
Is that why Jack X?
That is why Jack suddenly became like that, yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
No, genuinely, someone at Naughty Dog was like, we're shifting from the 11-year-olds demographic to the 14-year-olds demographic because people are getting older.
Anything else we want to say on this? Mitch, you kind of wanted to talk about game marketing stunts. Oh. That's kind of how we got to here. It's a Playboy Conker's Bad Fur Day marketing stunt.
So I got a couple marketing things here. We'll just briefly touch upon them. So the first one I have is for the Burnout 2, but this was by Acclaim. In the UK, they did a marketing stunt whereby if you were to get a speeding fine on the day that Burnout 2 was released, then Acclaim would pay for your speeding fine for you.
Fucking
and of
hell.
Course, the British government didn't really like this because they said it would promote dangerous driving. So it unfortunately never got to any point in stage. It was cancelled before it happened. So
no, I love the idea that a bunch of people like sped when Burnout 2 came out. And then they were like, no, I'm not paying the ticket. Go to fucking Burnout people for that.
So we all know about naming your kid Dovahkiin or naming your kid Turok.
Yep.
But
I don't think I knew the one about Turok, actually. Which was that for the first Turok?
There was a child named Turok.
And they get every Turok game from now on. They
which
get
is
a free
none.
Turok game. But wouldn't you rather put a video game name on your gravestone instead? So, for Shadow Man's Second Coming, or what you could do is you could basically allow the studio to advertise the game on the gravestone of your deceased relative. I believe this was, a lot of these were cancelled because they're not good ideas. This one was cancelled because they figured that a lot of impoverished families, poorer families, would utilize this to get grave money. They would basically pay for your funeral if you were to put the advertisement.
Funerals are expensive.
They are
like
expensive.
Yeah, I would absolutely do. Like, what was it? Was it like, here lies Math Problem? He really enjoyed Shadow Man: The Second Coming, or like
I think they just put a sticker.
It's a little
on
billboard,
your gravestone,
yeah.
A little billboard. And this was also a claim, by the way.
Jesus,
only good ideas.
I mean, yeah, this is a genuinely terrible idea because, yeah, you should put adverts on people's gravestones, that's obvious. But it's also really funny, and it's probably one of these things where the marketing agency is like, we're not actually going to do this, but if we get everybody talking about it, then Shadow Man 2 will be a huge success and it will spawn a multi-billion dollar franchise that will continue to this day.
This next one was to promote Mafia 2, whereby EA, not Acclaim this time, this is EA's fault, what they did was they usually, when video game marketers want to butter up reviewers, they will send them swag. In this case, they sent them illegal weapons. So,
Jesus.
To promote Mafia 2, EA would send brass knuckles to video game publications. Not only is it illegal to own brass knuckles in certain states in America, it's also illegal to ship them as well. Whenever EA had been brought forward to for an update on what they think, they didn't reply to any updates at all, and I believe the brass knuckles were confiscated by the authorities.
US Postal Service, presumably.
No, I think they got to a lot of these publications who opened them up and said, oh shit, an illegal weapon.
I'll have this.
This'll make a good article.
Yeah.
I'll have this.
I mean, like, Americans are so fucking stupid. What do you mean? It's legal to own a gun, but you can't own a brass knuckle? Come on now. I could kill way more people with a gun than a brass knuckle.
This next one was one that I took part in.
Yeah!
It was to promote Donkey Kong Country Returns for the Wii. I believe this promotion took place after the game came out, like a couple months after. What would happen was if you went into a game in the UK, we call them game because that's what our shops are called. You want to buy a game, you go to the game shop. If you want to buy lead, you go to the lead shop, you know? So what you do is you bring in a bunch of bananas and you hand it to the cashier and they would give you a copy of Donkey Kong Country Returns for free.
It's not free. You've just paid fucking bananas.
Are bananas worth anything? Isn't the price of bananas priceless? So actually, I paid more for the bananas, if you think about it.
That's true.
What I didn't know was that only the first 20 people to come in with their bananas would get the game for free. So I was left, I can't remember how old I would have been with my bananas, but I certainly had to take the bus to get there with my bananas.
Impressive.
I went there and said, "Hello, sir, can I have a video game for bananas?" And they said, "No!
Stupid child!
Go away!"
Donkey Kong jumped out from behind a box and he beat Mitch up and took his bananas and did not leave him with a copy of Donkey Kong Country Returns.
Let me tell you about Virtua Tennis 2 and how they were going to spray paint advertisement on their wings and attack Wimbledon with them.
On whose wings?
The pigeons' wings. What? Well, the claim, again, we're going to do, they were going to get a load of homing pigeons that were conditioned and hypnotized to fly at Wimbledon finals. They were going to spray paint Virtua Tennis 2 billboards onto their wings and then unleash them onto the unsuspecting Wimbledon public.
One, that shit would not fly in Wimbledon. And two, who's going to be able to read a pigeon's wings while it's in motion? That's an idiot idea.
No, just fine.
I think Acclaim, like, came up with these ideas, never planned to go through with them, and just hoped people would write articles about
maybe
them to get the word out because they were so stupid.
This one's for Moogle, and it's not really a thing.
Here we go.
But it's something fun. This is the Sega Super Circuit. I don't know what it was meant to promote, but maybe it was meant to promote that Sega are the best company in the world. What it is they took Outrun arcade cabinets, they retrofitted them to RC cars with little cameras on them and had them race around a little scale electric track.
Oh, that's adorable. I'm looking at this now.
89, it says here. Yeah. So this is some pretty good tech. You have RC cars that are transmitting tiny-ish cameras to go to wirelessly to Outrun cabinets that are in direct control of...
Oh, wow. That's very cute.
...of the player, and it seems to be working relatively well.
This is kind of cool, actually, yeah.
Because of the sheer size of this thing, it was only ever put at, like, some trade shows.
Yeah.
And I believe the Sega arcade in Tokyo for a time at the very top floor.
This is like what Nintendo's doing now with that weird Mario Kart game for the Switch.
But this is better because Sega did it.
This is cooler. Yeah, this is really cool, actually.
Sega did it 30 years in advance.
Sega does what Nintendo doesn't will do for the next 20 years.
Incredible.
Yeah, I like that. It's good.
You had me at Outrun Cabinet, so...
These are racing games, so let me segue into another type of racing game, because what this is a tier one racing game
that yeah,
these,
this is a tier one
these
racing
Outrun
game.
Sky Electric games are, but there are multiple levels of tiers of racing games, aren't there, Specs?
Let me give you the pitch, okay. So when you think about racing games, there are three tiers of racing games. You got your tier one races, which tend to be your car racing games, vehicle-based racing games. Mario Kart I'd stick in here as well, although you're using items. Basically, the car will go forward, back, left, right, round corners, maybe do a little jump, but doesn't really get that much air time. You don't have much influence in the air. That's your tier one racer, your bog standard racing game that when you think of it, you'll be thinking of Burnout or like Gran Turismo, whatever. Those are your tier one races, even like Hydro Thunder, okay?
Boring!
Boring game. Tier two racing games. snowboarding games and board related games. So I'd be thinking of like Sonic Riders, Zero Gravity and stuff like that as well. You've got a bit more control of your character in the fact that they can jump at any point, which allows some verticality in the levels. So you can split your shortcuts up and down as well as left and right. Sometimes your characters will be able to charge up a meter and have an ability as well. But generally you are stuck. The problem with a tier 2 racing game is you're stuck going downhill for most of it. So you don't really have the ability to pick up speed going uphill. So most of the tier 2 races will be from top to bottom and then you get to the end, or there's like a warp that takes you back to the top, which I think is something Snowboard Kids does. I don't know. I don't play that shit.
Boring.
Boring game. All right. Tier 3 racing games. This is a racing game where you're in full control of your character. There is no vehicle, there is no board. You are on foot and you are able to turn around and run in the opposite direction with just a flick of a stick if you wanted to. This gives you full control over your character. You can run uphill, downhill, left, right, jump up to a different shortcut. You can grind on a rail because your character's probably got some cool boots on that let them do that. There can be items in this game. There can be no items in this game. Depending on what version of Rayman M you're playing, you might just be able to freeze people in place. Tier 3 racing games are the shit. We're talking Mad Dash Racing. We're talking Rayman M. We're talking Running Wild. We're talking Sonic R. We're talking Pen Pen Tri-Isilon. And that's fucking it. There's like 5 of these and there are no other tier 3 racing games, because as you go up the tiers they become more scarce. But this is the ultimate type of racing game. Don't at me.
So this is something that I think Mitch started this discovery, right? Because he unearthed from somewhere Pen Pen Tricellion. A game in which you play as kind of like diseased looking seals
penguins.
Or something.
They're penguins.
They're pen pen animals.
They're pen pen, which is a fictional kind of animal that can walk around, slide down ice, and swim in the glitchy water. The interesting thing about Tier 3 racing games is that somewhere in the mix of all Tier 3 racing games, there is like a really good game. But each Tier 3 racing game only gets one thing right.
Yes. Yes, it does. So I think my favorite Tier 3 racing game, and the most fully realized one maybe, is Mad Dash Racing on the Xbox. It's got a Scar soundtrack. We're all going on a mad dash.
It's got one Scar song in it.
It does. It's got a lot of the music is by Moby and Fatboy Slim. The levels are big in Mad Dash Racing. They take like 7 minutes to complete each. There's no loops. The environments tend to vary quite a lot through the level. You've got like 3 different types of characters and they've all got weird abilities. So one can run through walls, certain types of walls. One can fly for short segments, and the other one can... Oh, they can run up hills. They can run up certain hills. But you collect little gemeralds, like coins in Mario Kart, and then you can do all 3 if you've got max gemeralds. A lot of Tier 3 races will have like a dedicated attack button, and Mad Dash has this weird lock-on like running attack that you'll do to knock into people that makes you run faster than you normally would, so you can just instantly catch up with people and hit them. Mad Dash has got grind rails, it's got monkey bars that you can go along, it's got tons of different shortcuts per level, it's got bounce pads, which are quite nice in the way that a Tier 3 racing game is basically just a racing platformer, and Rayman M does that probably the best. It feels the most like a platformer that you're racing in, I would say.
All of these games give you different levels of control over exactly where you can go. Like Pen Pen is just straight like tank controls platformer style almost. Rayman M is very much you're on a track and you can move left and right, kind of like in Crash Bandicoot, and then Mad Dash sort of splits the difference. It like does some stuff for you, but it like guides you, but it doesn't tell you exactly what to do.
Yeah, Mad Dash has this problem where the levels are really difficult to read the first time you go through them because they are so big, and you quite often have to like do a drift because your characters can drift in that game as well. Yeah. And so you'll have to like drift around a big corner or end up just like going in completely the wrong direction. Rayman M is the other better realized tier 3 racer, I think. It's a lot better signposted, but because of it, the levels are a lot more simple. It tends to be run in a straight line. Shortcuts tend to be up and down. So if you stay on the higher shortcut, so if you stay on the top level, you tend to go faster than the bottom level, but you have to do some tricky platforming to realize it. Rayman M, you can swing off purple looms like in Rayman 2. A lot of the controls are similar to Rayman 2, and there's no definitive version of Rayman M. There's like five different ports of it. You've got Rayman Rush on the PS1, you've got Rayman M on the PS2, you've got Rayman Arena, I think it is, also on the PS2, and on the, I think this was the one that was re-released for GameCube and Xbox, but the GameCube and Xbox re-releases have different levels, different characters, and power-ups, whereas Rayman M only has one attack, which freezes the person in front of you, and is really fucking annoying.
It just breaks the game, it just makes it much worse.
Yeah, so anytime you're not in first place, you have access to this freeze-like gun, essentially, which if you manage to hit someone with it, which is quite easy to do because it's got a fair bit of auto lock on, they will just get frozen in place for 2 seconds, at which point you overtake them and then they hit you again. So while the like fourth through second players are fighting over who gets to freeze each other, the first player tends to be running off into the lead and is unopposed because like there's no items. Unless you play one of the ports of it which introduced items, and then you've got things like shields and lightning and like green shell equivalent things and stuff. But that version has fewer levels than the other version of Rayman M. It's got like one less level. And it's weird, but I think Rayman M is a pretty fun game.
What I'll say about them is that Rayman M maybe has the most polished execution of the Tier 3 racer concept.
Yeah.
But it also feels on some levels shallow. Like, by losing that level of, like, steering and control, you're probably losing a lot of the depth of the racing mechanic and, like, finding the racing line.
Yeah.
Mad Dash Racing has that, but it has terribly designed levels, in my opinion, that just don't tell you where to go at all.
Yeah, but the ability set is a lot more interesting for what you can do. Like, you can drift and grind and glide and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The gliding in particular adds some interesting verticality, because you can be like, I'm up on the high path and I think I can save some time if I jump off and glide down. Like, you know, you can, there's a lot of ways you can go through the levels in that game.
Yeah.
Pen Pen is really interesting because it's, I think it's the only one of these games that gets the combat loop right. Because like with Pen Pen, the idea is that you can push a button to launch yourself at your opponent. And if you hit them, you'll tackle them and overtake them. But if you miss, you will stumble and fall and lose a lot of time. So yeah, it's like really interesting in terms of like the risk and reward of it.
The tackle also resets its cooldown as well. So you can go from, if there's all the racers are bunched up together, you can bounce from one person to the other.
Yeah.
And the tackle can also be used to get a little bit of boost that you can use to transition into different parts.
I also have to say, with some small exceptions, I think the art style of Pen Pen, where everything looks fucked up and horrible, I like that the most out of all of them.
Yeah. That's because the characters in Pen Pen were designed by the same person who designed Espio the Chameleon from Sonic. And he designed the characters specifically because he said, if the characters were cute, you would feel bad when bad things would happen to them. So I made them deliberately ugly and unappealing so that when horrible things happen to them, you wouldn't feel sorry for them.
Like, Pen Pen is pure Dreamcast core in that, like, I'm booting up a game and it just looks like a fucking fever dream kind of way.
Yeah.
And it has an uncapped frame rate, and it sometimes runs at 60 and it sometimes runs at 15 frames per second.
There's also, like, there's two or three different versions of it. So the splash screens for loading in the version we tend to play are weird pre-rendered pictures of the Pen Pens in situations that look like they live in, like, Denmark. Whereas in the Japanese version, it's got like a bit of trivia about each Pen Pen. And then I think the European version just has some like nice little cartoons or something. Yeah. Then the other two tier 3 racing games we haven't really talked about are Sonic R, which is a bag of shit game.
Yeah, do not play that game.
And Running Wild, which is just very basic. Me and Mitch played it, and was there anything good about it, Mitch? Like, there weren't really any shortcuts.
The tits on the characters were very big.
Who made it? It was someone who went on to make big things, right?
It was made by a nobody's.
It was
Blue
it.
Shift Inc.
But yeah, all of the characters in that are weird furries. It's got a really cool character select screen, though, where whenever you like change character, the previous character gets bumped out of the way by the character you're choosing.
I love games like that. I love when they do something stupid and unnecessary with their user interface.
It says on the box of Running Wild, from the producers of Crash Bandicoot. I think that's what I'm thinking.
From the producers.
Is that Saw Shrek?
Running Wild, I don't think I'd copy anything really from. It's not very good. So I think we decided that like the best amalgamation would be the skill set of Mad Dash Racing with the music of Sonic R with the track design of Rayman M and the combat system of Pen Pen, right?
Now, I'm going to be honest with you, all those people who have the time and skills to program an entire video game from scratch, this is $1 million idea and you're cutting us in.
Yeah, I really do believe in the tier 3 racer. I don't think anyone's done it right yet, but I think the fact that you have so much control, you're basically racing in a platforming game, which I think could be really fun if the platforming mechanics are right, if it's balanced in a way that you can do a little bit of combat but it doesn't feel like broken, and just it would lead to a high skill ceiling which would be fun to play for hours and hours and hours, whereas a lot of racing games suffer from like you'll have one friend who's just better than everybody and there's not easy ways to like get better because like if you know the track you know how to win really well, whereas I think the like frantic nature of a tier 3 racer means that things can get fucked up a lot easier like whenever anyone groups up, and I think you can have more interesting shortcuts, there can be more risk reward for taking shortcuts than there is in just like track racers. So yeah, I really like them.
I don't necessarily agree with Specs for that, but I do think that, like, just, you know, people like playing 3D platformers and people like speedrunning 3D platformers or doing time trials in them. So why not have a racing game with that kind of movement instead of driving a car, which, as if I wanted to drive a car, I'd just drive to work.
Yeah.
You do that all the time, in fairness.
Yeah, exactly.
Recently, I found out that the Tier 2 racer, Sonic Riders, which is kind of, it's like not quite a snowboarding game because you're on like a weird gravity board, but it's basically a snowboarding game with Sonic characters. That has a competitive scene, and they have re-released the game with a competitive mod.
Oh dear.
And like possibly made their own version of Dolphin that has rollback netcode for it.
Impressive.
Thank you, Sonic community.
If a Tier 2 racer can get that much dedication, why not a Tier 3 racer?
All I need is someone who likes Mad Dash Racing with the obsessive nature of somebody who's still somehow tolerating Sonic the Hedgehog.
There are lots of them.
Speaking of racing, what's one thing you can't do in a Tier 3 racer that you could do in a Tier 1 racer and would inspire a NASCAR driver to win at a NASCAR event?
Can you slam your fucking vehicle into a wall to make it speed up?
You can.
Good lord.
That is what happened with man. He was going really fast, but he wasn't going fast enough. So he decided to do what we all do in racing games, whereby you smash your car on the outer rim of the track and then just floor it and go faster.
Yeah, I do that deliberately.
No one had ever done it before. He pioneered the move in real life, and when asked, where'd you come up with that idea? It's like, I don't know, I've done it in video games, I thought it'd work.
I think he said it worked in Gran Turismo, so he did it there.
did he somehow enter the bumper cars bullshit realm of Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed?
You just got to hit them at the right angle and you get a little boost.
Have we got a video of him doing this so I can see what he, like, how does this work? Surely there is friction so you can't go as fast. Like, how did he manage to go faster driving into the wall?
But it's technically safer because you can hug the wall.
You can squeeze past the other cars.
Yes. So you don't have to worry about exactly how you're steering in that sense. Like,
wait, what you're saying is the man actually didn't find a physics glitch in real life, which I was hoping he would have.
He was allowed, I believe, to keep his whatever finish it was, but like...
How is he going so much faster than those other cars?
He's flooring it.
The thing about racing, professional racing, is a lot of the drivers don't actually hit the pedal all the way down to the ground, which makes them go slower.
What? Why? You're supposed to be going fast.
Yeah, they haven't set it up in the emulator, have they?
He overtakes like 5 people doing this.
It's very difficult to push the accelerator all the way down. It takes a lot of skill. These guys are professional racers. You know what the fuck you're talking about.
But they're going so slowly. He is going twice as fast as some of these cars.
They're trying to make the corner so they don't hit the wall, and he's like, oh, if I'm always hitting the wall, I can't hit the wall.
This guy did break the game, I guess.
He was censored for this afterwards. Like, they told him, you can't do that.
Why not?
It's not sportsmanlike behavior.
If Nintendo didn't want me to do it, why would they put it in the game?
There's gonna be, like, NASCAR debates for the next 10 years that are like, was it wrong for him to intentionally crash his car to win this race?
Yes. Because they already said that you can't do that.
That's bad gameplay.
So yes, I would say that's bad game design.
That's bad game design.
I would say that's bad game. So he missed, he was so close to the wall that he accidentally missed going through an invisible checkpoint, so the lap didn't count. He had to go do it again. What other video game techniques do you think could be used to enhance real sport? Because I personally think that triathletes would do better if they did the triple jump from Mario.
Yes.
RNG seeding in golf. So that you can get all of the best wind.
Yeah, change the wind direction.
When skeet shooting, it acts like gun game. So every time you hit a skeet, your gun transforms into a different type of gun until you hit the next target.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. There was a weird thing where, like, obviously not based on a video game, but just ways that people have improved racing. One guy one time was just like, I bet I could outswim everyone if I just didn't come to the surface. That is why, like, nowadays, swimmers always have such a long push-off before they start doing anything above water. It's because you can go faster if you're below water for longer. So one guy just pioneered that and everyone started doing it. And there was, like, a cross Australia race. So from, like, the east to the west of Australia. And this old dude was like, bet I could beat the time that everyone gets on that. And everyone's like, you've not even trained. How are you going to do that? He was just like a farmer. And what he did to win this race was, because it took multiple days, he just slept for less time than everyone else.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone was sleeping for 8 hours. And he was like, well, that's stupid. If I only sleep for 4 hours, I get 4 more walking hours in. So he won the race by walking it, whereas other people were jogging it, because he had 4 more hours in the day than everyone else.
That is incredibly funny.
I've got one. We know the high jump. You know the high jump in the Olympics. It's where there's a big pole and you jump over it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We all know the technique of how it's done, where you go...
You twist.
Head first, back over it, and then your legs land first.
Yeah.
That was a technique that was invented on the spot at the 1968 Mexican Olympics. Before that point, everyone would do all these weird techniques, like going head first, facing forward, jumping, and they would not get any, like, the highest height on the high jump was like 1.5 meters or something ridiculously small. And then there was this one guy, Dick Fosbury, who did the technique that we all know today and absolutely smashed every record by like 30 centimeters. It was ridiculous.
On the one hand, that's kind of funny, but on the other hand, it's kind of lame when someone just discovers, like, objectively the best way to do something, and then everyone's like, oh, I'll do that.
Well, it's a new speedrun technique, you know.
Maybe there'll be
the meta.
The meta needs to be constantly evolving. It's like before people worked out how to fly, and there are all these dudes who are like, I'm going to build a flying contraption. It's like a bicycle with wings or something. Like, once the Wright brothers invented the fucking plane, all of that, all of the fucking wheeled fucking wing bicycles just went out the door. And what I'm saying is that is a great loss for engineering.
I agree. It's like when the meta of a competitive video game solidifies and people just say you can't play as certain characters because they're not viable. And then somebody will eventually come up with a weird way to play as that character. But we could have continued to advance the meta with that weird character if people had just like not been so down on them for years, you know?
We're dependent on wheels our whole lives. Have crumbled to a halt because we are dependent on wheels.
You're dependent on wheels because you insist on using wheels to decide everything.
You partake in wheels too, so therefore...
These fuckers, these absolute idiots, every time they want to watch a video game themed movie, instead of being like, that looks like a good movie, I'll watch that, they spin a giant wheel with 1,000 video game movies on it, and then they watch absolute fucking bullshit like the Lost Pokemon Live 20th Anniversary fan edit recreation.
Which we have rolled on this week's wheel, yes.
Or Dead Trigger, a movie so boring I've forgotten everything about it. Or every single Spy Kids movie, even though only one of them is about video games.
We have a million things on this wheel and it grows bigger every day, and yet we've somehow landed on every Spy Kids movie. How?
We have, haven't we?
It's enchanted to land on. Did you watch all the Spy Kids movies in order as well?
Yes, because that's how they come up on the wheel.
The wheel wanted you to watch all the Spy Kids movies.
We'll get Machete next, it'll be fine.
Well, we had to watch the first two to get context for the third one, which is the video game movie.
Yeah.
And then we kept watching them past that for some reason.
For no reason.
Because Squiddo said we had to.
Oh, Robert Rodriguez. You don't have to spin a wheel to make a decision.
It makes it so much easier, though. We spun a wheel to decide the book club game, didn't we?
Okay, next time you need to make an important decision, just ask me.
No.
The problem we've got now is we've also got on the main wheel a link to another wheel that is to watch video game series, and we've got a link to another wheel to watch foreign language films, and another one for live action anime movies, and we also use a wheel to tell us what British game shows to watch when we watch those, and we've got a lot of wheels now.
Wheels within wheels.
Let's talk about the last few things we rolled on the wheel. So we rolled Dead Trigger, which is a video game movie based on a phone game that nobody's ever heard of. It was really bad, and the main characters were a bunch of kids that were put into a program to kill zombies because they had played a video game about killing zombies, but none of them had any skills.
No. So the movie is a generic zombie movie about a bunch of kids who learn to kill zombies by playing a video game. But the twist is that none of the shit that happened in the movie actually happened, and actually, they were all just playing a video game. But then the second twist is that 2 weeks after the events of the movie, all of the things that happened in the movie then did actually happen in real life.
Yeah, and one of the kids shot himself in the head the first time he tried to shoot a gun.
That is the only good scene in the movie, is that like they're teaching all the kids to use guns, and one kid picks up a gun and instantly blows his own head off.
Beautiful.
We watched the Monster Hunter movie with Mia Jovovich, She generally fights men and not monsters. And then there's like a weird cliffhanger ending where they don't even fight the like monster that's caused all the problems, possibly because Paul W.S. Anderson was hoping to make another movie, but he won't because he's bad.
He will. He'll make another movie. Isn't he making the next Resident Evil movie? I think he is.
Paul W.S. Anderson is just terribly shit at this. Have you watched any good films?
We watched Dofus. Dofus is actually good.
Dofus was good. Dofus. Surprisingly good, yeah. Great animation.
Is Dofus a movie that's based on a TV show that's based on a game that's based on a TV show that's based on a game?
No. So Dofus is a movie that follows on from a series that's based on a MMORPG, which is French.
Ew.
More like Doofus.
And then WakFu is an animated series based on a video game, which is based on a video game, which is French. WakFu's like the sequel to Dofus, I guess. We watched the Persona 3 stage play.
I liked it.
Mitch liked it.
No one else did, apparently.
Oh, the best. Yeah, the best one was watching all the fan movies.
Yeah, we watched a load of weird fan movies. They were good. Phoenix Wright is okay.
Phoenix Wright was good, yeah.
I liked, what was the one we watched that had Daniel Radcliffe in
it? Game Changers.
Oh, Game Changers.
Was it, no, was it him or was it Frankie Muniz? No, we watched, what was the one with Frankie Muniz in it? That's the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, Still Alive?
Still Alive, yeah. That's, it's not based on a video game, but it's like, very heavily influenced from video games. That's where, like, you die in the game, you die in real life comes from. And they're all playing, like, this horror video game, but whenever anyone dies in the game, they die in real life. So they're, like, trying to get away from the ghost of video games that's chasing them. But it's actually not a bad movie.
Remember, we watched Cats?
Oh, fuck, we watched Cats.
Cats was fun to watch, yeah.
No, it wasn't. It's a lie.
You watched Final Fantasy The Spirits Within.
We have done that, yes.
It's a movie that I actually like.
Why?
Because it's such a product of ridiculous hubris.
It's just filled
Square. Because you're a contrarian. You're a fucking shameless contrarian.
No. Number one, it's like watching Xanadu. It's like, we will create the first completely digital actress.
Yes.
Which is a ridiculous thing to say. And second of all, it doesn't make any fucking sense whatsoever. The plot of that film is about an asteroid that brings the ghosts of aliens to Earth.
Yeah, and Ming-Na Wen plays that lady who was a digital actress.
The worst things that we've watched, I think, Assassin's Creed is just dull.
Creed was ass.
Grandma's Boy.
Now, Grandma's Boy is class.
You didn't watch it.
I didn't watch it with you guys. I've watched it before. I like it.
Specs, once again, the man with no taste. Fuck me. Grandma's Boy was awful. Like, what, the fucking 8-bit Christmas thing? Not even fucking video games. Fuck off.
I wasn't there, but you watched Hackers, which is a great film.
We watched Hackers, which is good. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, Hackers was good.
Oh, hold on, I remember. We watched Ants.
We sure did.
Well, he's not fucking here to talk about it. But we watched Ants because, I think because of a running joke about ants being brought up on this podcast, but like, Ants is a spiritually damning film to me because it's a centrist movie and it's a royalist movie as well. So the ants are fighting against oppression, but the military are repressing them. And once they get rid of the military, they put the royal family on the throne. And the royal family's like, yeah, we're going to make everything great. And then the movie ends. Also, in the movie, two ants find a literal paradise where the floor is paved with food. They find like a big garbage dump and they spend a little bit of time there and then they go back to the colony and it's never brought up again. And presumably that colony is going to live the rest of its life in struggle while a literal utopia is like 2 days walk away.
Well, let's go into Cats. I'm you now. You yeah. were me who said, I'm oh, you. There's a utopia that they have. But I'm you now. I said, yeah. Well, the royals would have colonized the utopia and made it bad. And that's what you would say if you were replying to you that was me.
Probably, yeah, I would have. And if I was, and now that I'm you, I would have claimed that the royals probably would have brought them there off screen and just didn't mention their plan. They would have resettled the colony. Or maybe the moral of the story is that you can't have that and that it's an unrealistic goal. And the reason that they return to the ant colony is out of a sense of duty or honor or obligation.
You know, there's a cameo from Z in Ants in Shrek.
Oh my god.
It's all connected.
At the start of the scene where Shrek and Donkey go to Farquaad's castle, there's a little, what do you call them? The kiosk place? The turnstiles? And if you look, if you squint your eyes, in the background, you can see a poster of Z from Ants.
Yeah, he's there. He's in the little booth. Yeah.
The absolute DreamWorks cinematic universe is happening right here.
That's why Ants Racing had Shrek in it.
Which means that Z from Ants exists in the Shrek universe as a magical creature that Lord Farquaad wanted to capture in prison and, if I assume, destroy.
Okay, you want me to play us out?
Yeah.
Please.
All right, this has been the podcast with us lot.
I think it's called the lunchtime.org.uk podcast, maybe.
I think we just call it Lunchtime, right?
Yeah, if you call it Lunchtime, people will just Google Lunchtime and not find it.
Well, it's the only podcast, so we're the only choice that they've got.
Sorry, it's the only podcast. Sorry, my bad, I forgot.
You've been listening to the Lunchtime Podcast with Matthew Problem. If you've got a problem that we didn't solve on this episode, write in at lunchtime.org.uk.
Now to play us out, the soothing sounds of the review of the Electro Wank. The technology of hands-free orgasms. An intrepid reporter jolts his prostate so that you, the reader, can experience a rip-roaring ejaculation. Palmless putt-pounding with Stephen Lemons. As much as I enjoy letting fly a huge wad of splooge, spanking the monkey requires too much damn effort, whether I'm perusing the beaver hunt section of this fine publication or watching the latest Clive MacLean-directed Barely Legal DVD. Breaking a sweat in the pursuit of a fistful of dork pudding is lame. With all the technology that's out there, why hasn't someone come up with a way for a guy to just push a button and empty his balls in one massive spurt of pancake batter? My quest for a hands-free dolphin polish finally brought me to the website of Las Vegas-based Paradise Electro Stimulations, PESElectro.com, an outfit offering a variety of devices designed to bridge the gap between human and machine when it comes to sex. PES devices achieve this utilizing EES, an acronym for Erotic Electro Stimulation, as developed by PES's mysterious and elusive founder, the suave and sophisticated Dante Amore. Amore's patented system involves a power box that one plugs into a wall socket and various electrodes specially designed to deliver electric current to ye old naughty bits. For guys, there are a number of attachments that can sock it to the penis, testicles, and prostate, and for chicks, there are connectors made to electrify the pussy, clit, and anus. According to PES's website, the correct combination of these devices properly used can induce more powerful, more prolonged, and, sometimes, hands-free orgasms in certain individuals. The thought of strapping a lightning rod to my cock or sticking a cattle prod up my keister was not immediately appealing. But then, I'd read good things about PES, and its homepage boasts no complaints from clientele since the company started up in 1986. PES's internet site also describes in detail the complexities of its merchandise. As long as one uses common sense and does not apply PES products anywhere above the waist, the inventions are relatively safe and painless. On the advice of PES customer service, I obtained the following configuration, as its nomenclature calls it, a power box that sort of looks like the remote control for a model airplane, a tubular base ring made of silicon that one slips on behind the scrotum, surrounding the penile shaft, an electroflex cap that fits snugly on the cockhead with a silicon strap intended to run over the top and nestle into the urethral opening, and finally a small bulbous prostate stimulator called the Gold Spot, which one inserts in the poop chute in order to hit the so-called male G-spot.
The Gold Spot.
Simultaneously using all of these products, making sure they don't fall out or disconnect, applying PES's electro lube to increase conductivity, and fiddling with the various knobs on the power box, all while trying to maintain a boner, is a much more complex process than I had anticipated. After all, what I was after was some stress-free stroking, but this was more like trying to build a transistor radio from scratch. Initially, all I got was a more intense orgasm than usual. Not bad, but not the brass ring either. Disappointed, I again contacted PES customer service, and I was informed that it might take some practice, so I went back to the drawing board. The power box has four knobs labeled coarse, fine, pulse, and frequency, all with settings of 1 to 10. I had to crank the coarse to 10 before I felt a swift, almost sharp sensation going from back to front. Next, I adjusted the fine settings to about a 7. I eventually set the pulse, which controls flow of electric stimulation, at 10. As for the frequency knob, I played with the setting on it at both high and low. At some point, it felt as if someone were caressing my genitalia from the inside out with a tingling velvet cloth. After continuing in this vein for several minutes, I experienced a faint, prolonged rumbling that began behind my balls and then flowed like a slow wave up to the head of my shaft. Finally, my cork popped with an immense load of chode gurgling from underneath the cockhead stimulator and running down the inside of my thigh. All without one frigging handstroke. It was a unique experience, but one difficult to achieve all by one's lonesome. I suppose if I had a couple of hot chicks stringing me up to these devices and manipulating the power box until I reached Satori, it would be an earth-shattering experience. But if I could afford a pair of bodacious hookers to service me in such a manner, I might as well just fuck 'em. Since I can't afford the hose, I have to take care of myself. In that case, I might as well beat off. See, some things are still done better the old-fashioned way, like hand-cranked ice cream, hand-pulled taffy, and yes, a hand-waxed wiener.
Stephen Lemons has written for such publications as LA Weekly, OC Weekly, and Los Angeles Times, Bizarre and While You Were Sleeping, and is a prolific contributor to Salon.com and GettingIt.com.